fourth case for argument this morning is United States against Evans. Mr. Masioli.
Sorry, Judge. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Mark Michalik, appearing for Matthew Evans. Mr. Evans was sentenced as a career offender after being found guilty at jury trial of bank robbery and other offenses. Your Honors, the purpose of looking behind the statute of conviction, the prior conviction, to documents authorized by Shepard is not to examine the defendant's actual conduct. Rather, it's to determine what law he was convicted of violating. One of the convictions that the district court found was a predicate.
One of the problems is that the Illinois aggravated battery statute has some subsections that really involve beating somebody to a pulp and other sections that involve insulting a police officer. So it's covering everything in a very wide range, and one would think that under Taylor and Shepard, one could look at the charging papers to see in which way it was the defendant actually violated this statute.
Except then, Your Honor, what the court would be doing is abandoning the categorical approach and taking a case-by-case approach to each different conviction.
How do you understand what Taylor and Shepard hold when Taylor says that only generic burglary, that is, entry of a residence, is a violent felony under federal law, but some state laws define burglary as the entry of any building. So it could be a residence, a chicken coop was one of the Supreme Court's examples. Taylor says you can look at the indictment and charging papers and plea colloquy to see whether the defendant has been convicted of entering a residence, that's a federal violent crime, or a chicken coop, or a railroad car, or something like that. The question I have for you is, aren't we equally entitled to look at the charging papers here to see whether the defendant insulted a policeman or beat him up?
Respectfully, Your Honor, no, I don't believe so. And the reason I think that is because the purpose of looking beyond the name of the conviction in Taylor was to determine what are the elements of the offense that this guy's convicted
of. No, the elements of the offense under state law in Taylor was entering a building with intent to commit a crime. And the Supreme Court held that you could look at the charging papers to see whether the building was a dwelling, although entering a dwelling was not an element of the state offense. That's why I'm asking this question. Right? You don't want us to disagree with Taylor. So we know we can look at the charging papers to find out things that are not elements of the state offense.
Your Honor, I have trouble reconciling the idea of looking at a conviction in a categorical.
So let's suppose we can look at the indictment and charging papers here. What do they show?
The indictment says that the defendant pushed a woman who was pregnant, and that constituted insulting or provoking contact. At the plea hearing, the prosecutor went through a rather detailed statement of facts that the government was alleging, and then the court asked Mr. Evans if it was still his intention to plead guilty, and he said it was, after hearing the recitation of the facts.
And now, that's right. So he didn't dispute that recitation of the facts, and he could have raised an objection to it if he had wanted, couldn't he?
I suppose theoretically he could have, although I don't know that in a high-volume criminal court that's really a practical option. And also,
why would you not want to look at the information or indictment and at the guilty plea? Why wouldn't you?
Because, Your Honor, my understanding is that what we're trying to do is categorize
offenses. No, a reason, not
well, because,
semantics.
Because, Your
you
Honor,
can understand why we don't want to retry these old cases and have if you had a jury trial and the jury, and it's a general verdict, you don't know what exactly happened, did he really push her hard and so on. Well, sure, you don't want to get into that. You don't want to have another trial within the trial. But if you're looking at uncontested, if you're looking at just a couple of documents which the defendant can't contest, what's the objection?
Because my understanding is that it's a, well, can I?
What's the objection in concrete terms? Maybe there's no objection. Maybe this is all, legal mumbo jumbo. But is there a practical objection to going down as far as the guilty plea?
I believe so, Judge, because the defendant, when they're doing the guilty plea, is not on notice that later on there may be another.
Of course he is. You always know that if you're whatever you're convicted of, it can come back to haunt you in a subsequent case, recidivist statute, so on.
But not necessarily.
Look, there are two reasons in play here. Taylor says we don't want to retry these old cases. And Shepard says retrying these old cases might violate the Sixth Amendment because it would have the judge decide things that under Apprendi have to be decided by the jury. But if you look at a transcript of a guilty plea colloquy, it doesn't sound like it is doing either of those things, not retrying anything, and it's not moving anything from a jury to a judge because the jury's been waived. So what's left as a reason not to look at the guilty plea colloquy?
Because if you have extraneous information in the guilty plea colloquy that goes beyond what is what's necessary to sustain the conviction.
Well, what's extraneous? The elements. I mean, if the judge asks, did you do X, Y, and Z? Because that's what you're charged with, and that's what the evidence is going to show and so on. And you say yes. Okay, what's extraneous there?
Well, very often there's a disagreement between the defendant and the prosecutor about exactly what happened. The prosecution's going
to
stick with there.
It has to be straightened out when he pleads guilty, right?
Well, I don't.
He can't, if he says to the judge, look, prosecutor says X, I say Y, and so on, the judge isn't going to accept that.
Well, I think this is much more analogous to a kind
you're
of a
not,
plea of
you're
not no
saying
contest,
there was an
Judge.
Alford plea in this case, are you?
No, it's not an Alford plea, but I think it's more analogous to a plea of no contest. Like, I'm not going to contest this because I'm taking this plea deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine, Your Honors, a situation where somebody is charged with a burglary in a non-generic state. They're charged with entering onto a boat with intent to steal, which would be a potential non-generic burglary. But at the plea colloquy, the prosecutor offers facts saying that this boat happened to be parked in a building. So the guy is admitting at the plea colloquy that he entered into a building in order to enter onto the boat to commit this burglary. So at the time that he's doing the plea, he's not admitting to he's not charged with an offense that would have been a predicate under either armed career criminal or under the career offender. But we look back later and say, hey, he could have been charged with this generic crime. So I think that would violate the Sixth Amendment right to notice of what you're charged with. If we're looking back and saying, look, it looks like the conduct here that he admitted to at the plea, he could have been charged with something that's an element of violence.
I'm lost. He's charged with what he's charged with. We now have to figure out what the federal consequences of that are.
And I think in this case, Your Honor,
when you plead guilty to a state crime, you're not entitled to notice of the federal consequences when you commit some future crime.
True, but I think you're entitled to notice of the elements of the crime that you're admitting to, not that you may be, because the prosecutor says this is what you did.
Question about how things will be classified. Think back to Taylor. The guy's charged with entering a building for the purpose of committing a felony. He pleads guilty. That's what actually happened in Taylor. He's not charged with entering a residence. And the Supreme Court later says, yes, but if the building he entered was a residence, it's a crime of violence for federal purposes, and you get a recidivist sentence. Now, you're not saying that we should ignore the Taylor decision on the ground that it was unconstitutional. Maybe that is what you're saying, but Taylor is what it is, and we're going to follow it.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I believe that Taylor was about a case where the gentleman went to trial, and the court asked, can we look beyond the name of the law, can we look back at the jury instructions to narrow it down to see if the elements that he admitted to constitute generic burglary, not what did he actually do, because we can't tell from the name of the conviction. And it was the Shepard case, Your Honor, where the court was considering what do we have that's similar to the jury instructions in the Taylor case, and they said, well, if we use the admissions at the plea hearing, we can narrow down what it is that this particular defendant was charged with.
Suppose it was a special verdict in Taylor and it found that he entered a house. Would that be something that could be considered under the Armed Career Criminal Act?
The jury's specific finding of fact that he entered into a house? Yes, I believe so, Your Honor.
Well, what's the difference between that and the guilty plea?
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm wrong. I think the facts that establish the conviction are irrelevant to this determination. I think what we're trying to do is categorize, based on the elements of the offense, the crime
the
legislature defined.
The critical fact in Taylor was that it was a residence, right? And that wasn't an element of the state crime.
I think the holding in Taylor was that the defendant, in being found guilty, was found guilty of all the elements that constituted generic burglary, that as the Supreme Court looked at it. Not they didn't focus on the facts or conduct that was proved at the trial. I see I'm out of time, Your Honors. Thank you.
Well, this is generic violent battery, right? If he admits that or if the plea colloquy shows that, you know, he shoved her in the face and pushed her to the ground, he's pleading, and that's what he pleads guilty to. It's not the state offense. State offense doesn't matter whether he pushed her to the ground. But he's admitted to this generic federal violent battery, right?
But Your Honor, he's not charged with that, and there aren't.
No,
and he didn't. And the elements of the offense that he is
charged
with don't include
cases,
those things.
Right? Not charged with that. There is a difference between the elements of the state offense and the federal. Punishment bonus.
I just believe that the elements have to line up with between the generic burglary and the crime that's charged. That it's not a matter of just looking at the conduct and saying that seems like it's violent or that seems like it fits. It has to be the charge, not the facts either admitted or proved. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Graber.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Dan Graber. I represent the United States in this case. I also was the prosecutor that handled the case at the trial and the sentencing of Mr. Evans. The government believes, Your Honor, that the district court correctly found that Mr. Evans's conviction for aggravated battery is covered under the career offender guideline. We believe that it's covered under both prongs of the career offender guideline, both under the prong that requires that there be use of physical force, as well as the prong, the residual clause prong, Your Honor, that says that it contains conduct that presents a serious potential risk of physical injury to another. Under the first prong, Your Honor, we believe, and here's where the defendant is arguing, well, yeah, you can use the indictment, but the indictment charges that he pushed a pregnant female. You can't look at that part of it, and that's where we disagree. We believe that not only are we allowed to look at the indictment under Shepard and Taylor, but that you're allowed then to see, well, how is it charged? And in this case, it was charged the physical contact of an insulting or provoking nature. It was charged out as pushing a pregnant female. Now, we believe that that contains an element of physical force that's violent in nature. This court requires under Flores that element of physical force be of a violent nature. We believe that pushing a pregnant female covers the violent nature aspect. As this court says in Flores, you don't have to have actual injury as long as there's a likelihood of injury. And we believe that that's covered. There is a clearly likelihood of injury when you're pushing a pregnant female. Under the second prong...
Let me ask you this. Does contact alone with a pregnant woman not pushing create a serious potential risk of physical injury in your view?
You're in the second...
Just contact.
You're in the second prong,
right,
Your Honor, and yes, we believe it is. We believe that it's under Begay, it's purposeful, it's violent, and it's aggressive.
Why are you giving up on the plea, right? Because he said, or I guess he... I guess the prosecutor said he grabbed Miss Lauderdale by the face and pushed her down to the floor.
I'm not giving up on the plea, Your Honor. That was my second.
That certainly is more than just a... I mean, push could be anything. This is serious, more serious than just, you know, shove.
Correct. And what I was trying to do was to satisfy both prongs of the career offender guideline, that we could satisfy it under the the element prong of physical force of a violent nature. We could also satisfy it under the prong of presenting a serious risk of injury. And in order for me to satisfy that prong, I brought in the plea transcript to the district court and presented that to her to show here is the statement of facts that he admitted to during his guilty plea that clearly shows that he engaged in conduct that was purposeful, violent, and aggressive. If the court doesn't have any other questions, that's all the comments I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Masiolik, we appreciate your willingness to take the case and your assistance to the court as well as your client. The case is taken under advisement.